Welcome to The Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Welcome to the Jones Zone, this part two of Age with Grace, exploring the art and science of aging. Thank you for being with us. We talked to Ronnie Murdoch, a senior living consultant, expert in the field of gerontology. In today's show, we'll be exploring Medicare, the benefits and what it is and isn't. We'll also have a very important conversation about end-of-life care, very controversial. Welcome to the show, Ronnie. Please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Daryl. My name's Ronnie Murdoch. I'm a gerontologist, and I help guide families through all of their senior care-related issues. I've worked in the industry about 15, maybe almost 20 years now. I'm getting older, and I've worked in all different areas of it, but one portion of my career was about 6 years working in home health and hospice, so that's, you know, we'll talk more about what the hospice benefit is and end-of-life-related issues as we go through.
So tell Ronnie, what is Medicare?
Yeah, good question. So Medicare is our government-funded health insurance for seniors or those that are disabled. So you can get Medicare two ways. You can be disabled for 2 years or longer, or you can be 65. So when you turn 65, everybody in this country gets Medicare or the option to get Medicare. And what Medicare is health insurance. It's just like our health insurance we had, you know, when we had our jobs. It covers doctors, hospitals, and different benefits. It's sort of it is the crescendo that everybody hopes to get to when they turn 65 because it's really great insurance. So Medicare is our senior insurance that we deal with on a daily basis.
So when you're approaching 65, you get a ton of mail about choosing the Medicare Advantage program. How does one choose the correct Medicare program?
Good question. Yeah, I get that question all the time. You know, I've got this stack of mail on my table. How do I choose what to do? So when you're turning 65, you have a unique opportunity. You get to get into Medicare. And at that one moment in time, you're open like a brand new baby. You have no pre-existing conditions. You have nothing going on. You are blank slate. You get to choose your Medicare plan based just on being 65 and get it at the lowest cost. So what Medicare is an 80-20 split. Straight Medicare is 80% paid for by Medicare, and the other 20% the patient is responsible for. So if you go to a doctor and it costs $100 to go to the doctor, Medicare would pay 80 and the patient would be responsible for 20.
And there's supplemental.
Yes. So then you have the option to either get an Advantage program or to get a supplemental plan. So the supplemental plan would be an additional fee every month, and it covers that 20%. That is basically the best insurance that's out there that money can buy. And the supplemental plan, you're locked in at a rate when you turn 65. So if you choose to do the supplemental plan, you really need to choose it right when you turn 65, right when you're leaping into this whole world of Medicare. Because if you decide, you know, once you're having all of these ailments, these chronic ailments, that then you want the supplemental plan, they can then take all your pre-existing conditions into effect and charge you a lot more for that supplemental plan. So it becomes cost prohibitive most of the time at that point. So jump in when you turn 65 and choose your supplemental plan. That's the best option. But we have a lot of seniors that can't afford that supplemental plan. It's sometimes $300 or $400 even a month, even at its cheapest amount. And so if you're a senior that is just, that would be, you know, too much money to spend every month, then you're looking more at an Advantage plan, which is a plan where you pretty much sell your Medicare over to an HMO and they manage it for you and then give you services at different levels of co-payment prices. And so they'll basically contract out different services, contract to a hospital, contract for a surgery cost, and take the 80% Medicare gives them and give you a small fee. That is a great way for seniors that can't afford the supplemental plan to have good health insurance. However, you're really at the mercy of that HMO group. So, and the contracts that they have. So let's say at some point you need skilled nursing, or you need a surgery, or you want to go to a special hospital that takes, you know, you want to go to Johns Hopkins because you have some rare cancer. Those are out of the question. When you have that Advantage program, you have to stick within your plan and your program. So we obviously have the big names, right? We have the Providence Heritage Group, which are the St. Joe's, the St. Jude system. We have the PIH Group, which is at the Whittier Group. And then we have like Kaiser or CareMore, a scan. Everybody's heard those different programs. And so a lot of seniors choose based on what they had. If they had Kaiser and they know how to work the Kaiser system, then they choose Kaiser. If they, you know, have always been with the St. Jude Heritage Group, they're going to just choose St. Jude Heritage. It's just, you have to know when you're going into that HMO Advantage program that you are signing over your Medicare benefits to an HMO that then is going to manage it for you.
And then what would be the benefit? So people that choose that direction over what would be the other alternative? Just what we call regular insurance?
Yeah, you have four choices when it comes to getting Medicare. Choice one is just to have the 80-20 split and pay the 20%. Whatever that 20% is, you can pay it. Then you're just what we call a straight Medicare patient. You could have Medicare with a supplemental, and that monthly supplemental you pay for, $300, $400, $500 a month, whatever it might be, covers that 20%, whatever it is. So obviously that's great insurance, right? You are a PPO, you have total freedom in the market to go wherever you want. Everybody wants to take a Medicare with a supplemental patient.
PPO, is that your creme de la creme? What's the best insurance?
The Medicare with the supplemental is probably your best insurance. The most freedom to go where you want and when you want, and to get the doctors and all of your care providers paid the most money. So that's probably your best option if that's what's important to you. Then your other option is to go, the third option is to have the Advantage program, which is to say that you've given your Medicare benefit over to an HMO to manage, and they manage it, and that's an affordable option. So it's kind of a step below the Medicare with the supplemental, and you do have co-payments, you know, a $20 co-payment for a doctor's appointment, et cetera. But because they've contracted out services, they're able to keep, and they have so many lives that they manage, they're able to keep the costs low and able to keep your co-payments low. But in that position, you have limited choice. If you are with Kaiser, you're stuck with Kaiser. You can't go to St. Jude, or you can't go to PIH. You have to go to, or Hoag. You have to go to a Kaiser hospital. If you're then with the Hoag group, you can only go to Hoag. So you have to kind of choose wisely if you're going to choose that path. The fourth option is for our low-income seniors, which would be to get Medi-Cal as their supplemental, the 20%. And that's just for low-income seniors. So they would be what we call Medi-Medi patients. They have Medicare and Medi-Cal.
Got it. You know, I have a friend of mine who sells actually that insurance, and she's always talking about 65, when they're 65, 65. Is it, forgive my ignorance here, is there just a window of time that someone can get some of these insurances?
Yes. So you have one option when you turn 65. So the first of the month of your 65th birthday. So if you turn 65 March 15th, March 1st is when you would get access to Medicare. So you'll start to get, you know, information in the mail about your Medicare plan prior to that. So you have that option when you turn 65. And then there's open enrollment every year. So then at that point, it's every year going forward, you can make a change. But you will never get the lowest price on that supplemental again.
So in other words, you need to do it when you're 65. If you do it when you're 68,
right,
it's probably going to cost more. It's
yes.
been challenging, but you could.
You could. And you can also change laterally. So you can have one supplemental plan and change to another supplemental plan, or you can have one HMO and change laterally to another HMO plan. But to change from the supplemental to the HMO, you have to do that, or vice versa. You have to do that in the open enrollment period.
Now, what are some of the ethical considerations when it comes to end-of-life care for the elderly population? I know that's kind of a hot topic right now.
I think we first have to go back and talk about what the Medicare benefit covers, because Medicare is health insurance, and Medicare Part A, which everybody has, covers hospitalization, it covers skilled nursing, and it covers hospice, which is our end of life component. Medicare Part B covers all your doctor's appointments, and it covers home health, which would be like therapy coming to the house, physical therapy, occupational therapy that came to the house. So people always think that Medicare is going to cover everything long-term care related, and it doesn't. So it does cover your hospitalization. And then oftentimes seniors kind of go through this process where they go from hospital to skilled nursing for rehab. They call it rehab. So they get physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, or nursing care in a skilled nursing that's covered by Medicare. Then I get the call from the family that says, okay, you know, my mom's in skilled nursing for rehab. What does Medicare cover after that? And the answer to that is almost nothing. And so everything above and beyond the skilled nursing stay is private pay or through private insurance like long-term care insurance. So, or Medi-Cal, which covers long-term care for low-income seniors. So the what Medicare actually covers in the skilled nursing benefit is at a maximum 100 days. But usually these days people are getting more like 1 or 2 weeks. So this is where the difference between the Medicare with the supplemental and the HMO come into play. So if you have Medicare with the supplemental, you can go to any skilled nursing you want, and you can stay there probably longer, a longer period of time for rehab. Whereas if you have the Advantage HMO, you're locked into what they dictate, where you can go and how long you can stay there. So if you're a Medicare patient, straight Medicare with a supplemental, you might get to stay 30, 60 days, get rehab that you need. If you're an HMO patient, we're really seeing at a maximum about 14 days now. So we're in a lot quicker time frame to hurry up and get better and get out of there, wherever out of there might be, to the
Reminds
next level,
the,
where it's private pay or home.
The old Henny Youngman joke. I went to the doctor. He gave me 2 weeks to live. I didn't pay my bill, so he gave me another 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So.
You know, it's funny. I just saw for the first time someone come out of hospice. And I know, sorry, this might be a little bit left turn here.
Yeah,
but
it's fine.
I didn't realize, and I don't know if the audience does, that people actually can go, and I think of going into hospice, unfortunately, being, you know, you're in the black, but people actually go into hospice and come out.
Yes. We call them hospice graduates.
Oh, in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way. They graduate from hospice. So hospice is like hospitalization, and skilled nursing is a part of the Medicare Part A benefit. And it's really one of the last great Medicare benefits. It's a really rich benefit that helps patients a lot that are in their end of life. And we're seeing that evolve, and Medicare trying to cut costs just like, you know, anything, and that changing. But the way that hospice works is that two doctors have to certify that you have less than 6 months to live based on some disease process that you're diagnosed with, whether it's cancer or renal failure, COPD. There are actually nine different diagnoses that can qualify you for hospice. So usually your primary care doctor or a hospitalist at the hospital or at a skilled nursing, we call them SNFists, they'll write the initial order and send the order over to hospice, and a hospice nurse will come out and look through all your records and evaluate you and say you qualify or you don't qualify based on all these different parameters that Medicare has set for decline. And then you're given a benefit period. It's 60 days. And so through that benefit period, you have to, it's sort of the opposite of skilled nursing, where you have to continue to get better to stay there. In hospice, you have to continue to get worse to stay on hospice. So you have to decline. You have to lose weight or have a wound or have a fall or have an infection or have a decline in your heart function or, you know, whatever it might be, in order to continue to stay on hospice.
A need.
Yeah. A hospice need and a continued decline. And then you'll get another 60 days, and you get two 60-day periods. And then after that, it's every 30 days. And so we are now more than ever. I mean, I ran a memory care neighborhood. One of the 9 diagnoses is dementia. So I ran a memory care neighborhood where often I'd have, this was a decade ago, but often I'd have patients on hospice for years because they'd continue to decline just a little bit, and they'd continue to qualify.
Well, aren't we all?
Yeah, right, exactly. They'd continue to qualify in measurable amounts that their doctor felt were qualifying them for hospice. But now they've really changed the regulations, and if you are not making enough decline and are stable, you'll come off of hospice and go back into your regular care. And so you can come on and off of hospice. We see a lot of people come on and off of hospice during the end of life. So there's the benefit to hospice is that most people at a certain point don't want to bounce in and out of the hospital. and they're done. I've been to the hospital, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 times in the last few months, and I'm done with that. I don't want to go back to the hospital. That's usually when we start talking about hospice and taking care of them in a community health setting, wherever home hospice happens, wherever home is for the senior or for the person that's on hospice, not necessarily a senior. That needs care. So it can happen in your actual home. It can happen in a assisted living or a boarding care. It can happen in a skilled nursing, and hospice comes to them. We've even done it for homeless population on the street, you know, bring hospice to a tent. So there's all different kinds of ways to do hospice care and where it takes place. Just depends on where the patient's home is. So the benefit of that is to keep the person out of the hospital. Obviously, that's a cost-saving measure because the hospital is expensive.
Yeah, I spent a week in the hospital a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago, for COVID. And I was there for 1 week.
Yep.
You know what the bill was?
What was it?
It was $200,000. I was trying to remember because there's another part of it. $200,000 for 1 week stay. And what I was trying to remember was that it was $49,000 was for meds.
Right. Yeah.
I was only there for a week.
Crazy. It's crazy.
I could have went to the Bahamas.
Yeah. For 10 times over for that price, right? Yeah. It's the hospitalization is very expensive. And so a way to take care of our seniors that really don't want to be hospitalized, they don't like it, especially our seniors with dementia. You know, they don't like to be in the hospital. They want to be home. The beeping and the buzzing of the hospital is agitating.
Horrible.
Yeah. You're up at all hours of the night. It's horrible. Nobody likes to be in the hospital. So if you do qualify for hospice, that is a cost-effective way for us to take care of you at home and also give you what you want, you know, at home and the care that you need. And there are some diagnoses, like the best example is probably congestive heart failure, that you qualify for hospice and you can live on hospice much longer because they can manage it so much more closely than you can at a doctor's visit every month or every 2 months, because hospice is out there weekly.
I always thought, like I had mentioned before, is there a percentage of people that come out of hospice or do you
know? I don't know that there's a percentage necessarily. I mean, we do know that the average length of stay on hospice is less than 2 weeks. So that is, you know, unfortunately, we have people not taking advantage of the hospice benefit as soon as they should. We still have, you know, a great majority of our hospice population is has a cancer diagnosis. And so in order to go on to hospice, you have to stop treatment. So honestly, at the point where somebody with a cancer diagnosis that's been fighting for their life decides to stop treatment, you know, they're probably fairly close to the end. And then we have our seniors that have these more chronic ailments like Alzheimer's or like congestive heart failure or COPD that there are no diagnoses. There are no curative measures for. We can't cure them. We can only treat the symptoms. Those people are also qualify for hospice, but it's a little bit different because we're not stopping a curative treatment. We're just continuing these comfort measures that they really have been doing the whole time, just in a different sort of method.
What are some of the ethical considerations when it comes to end-of-life care for the elderly population?
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the biggest things we face on a day-to-day basis is making decisions in healthcare and how they affect our seniors, and is that their wishes? So I have to do a plug for making sure that you have an advanced healthcare directive and you have chosen a power of attorney that will execute your wishes, not your most emotional child. You know, definitely not the person that's going to want to keep you alive at all costs, but the one that will feel the duty to execute your wishes.
I'm reminded of a Seinfeld show when Kramer was going to have interviewing Elaine, and they gave a scenario, and she said, "Oh, pull that cord like you're starting a lawnmower."
Yeah, right. And that's different for different folks. You know, I met with a woman who is well into her 90s a couple weeks ago who wants full treatment. She wants CPR, she wants a feeding tube, she wants full care. And on the flip side, I'll often meet with somebody in there, you know, that understands that they don't want all those things. They just want comfort measures. You know, they don't have anything that's necessarily killing them right now, but they don't want tubes. They don't want to have their life prolonged. I'm 95 and I don't want them to break my ribs doing chest compressions. And so it just kind of depends on the person. So you have to decide what your wishes are and then write them up. And tell, you know, make sure the person that's going to be making those decisions for you understands what your wishes are, and then so that they can execute them appropriately.
And what is the right to die, I suppose? So, I mean, is that, what are the legalities on those?
Yeah, you know, we're still navigating that. I mean, that did become law in California, and it has been in effect in Oregon for many years. It does require two doctors to sign off that you have the capacity to do it for yourself. It can't be done by somebody else. But we also have a lot of studies out there that show that when somebody's really explained what hospice is and what that looks like, they'd actually rather have hospice than be given the right to die treatment. And so we're doing a lot of educating on what that is, what that looks like, what hospice looks like. You know, people are afraid of hospice. So they're afraid to die in pain. Well, nobody should be dying in pain.
For the record, I wasn't advocating that solution, yeah. But just yeah. A question.
No, it's a good question. And it is something that comes up often. And the problem is that if you're incapacitated, you don't have the right to end your life anymore because you can't make that decision and somebody else can't do it for you. And so often we think we're aging, we're going to make that decision to end our own life at a certain period of time. But aging is sort of a spectrum, right? And you kind of slowly, grayly pass over that area where you get to make that decision for yourself, right? And then all of a sudden you're on the other side of it and you can't make that decision for yourself.
But you can make it in advance with an advance directive.
But you have to be able to actually execute it yourself.
Oh,
so if
I see.
You can't open the pill bottles and you can't do it yourself,
got it.
Your arthritis is so bad in your hands, you can't actually physically do it, then you no longer have the ability to do that. Or you now have a dementia diagnosis, you no longer can do that. So this is never going to be an option for somebody with dementia. It's going to be an option more for, I mean, like we see the most famous cases, the one of the young woman that had brain cancer and moved to Oregon and had to establish residency and all of that to be able to, you know, use that right.
Yeah, that's a tough situation. Well, I tell you, that's been incredibly helpful. I hope our listeners got, I'm sure, a lot out of this. So that wraps up part two of this Age with Grace episode. We hope that you gained some new insights and learned something new that will help you today. Remember, aging is not a one-size-fits-all experience, and we should approach it with curiosity, compassion, and respect. If you haven't already checked out our episode on senior-assisted living with Ronnie and science of aging, be sure to add them to your playlist. Thank you so much, Ronnie, for joining me today. How can our listeners find you?
Thanks for having me, Daryl. I'm happy to talk to any listener that wants to talk about Medicare or end-of-life issues or hospice if they're appropriate. Then give me a call on my cell phone, 714-458-7300, and I'll be happy to discuss their specific set of facts and figure it out for them.
Awesome. That's so helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Ronnie and friends, for tuning in. And until next week, stay curious and embrace the journey of aging. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.